Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection. Tonight's guest took a real-life fish story and turned it into a children's book that she hopes will lure people to the gospel, as well as teach children about being a voice to the voiceless, respect for all creation, along with understanding and compassion. Irish Beth Maddock, a published poet and playwright, adds children's author to her credits with the publication of The Great Carp Escape. Irish, who grew up in the Okanagan, now lives in Calgary and is on the phone to talk with us tonight. But before we get to our interview, let's listen to All We Have from the Wherever We Go CD by the Royal Foundry.
It's you and me now, living the quiet life. It's you and me now, we've been burned once or twice. Say, ooh, come a little closer.
And now to our interview with Irish Beth Maddock. Good evening, Irish.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm fine. Now let's let our listeners get to know a little bit about you, get to know you a little better. When did you start writing?
I've been writing since I was a kid. I remember my grade 5 teacher asking me what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I told her I wanted to write.
Well, when you were writing, when you were starting at that level, what type of things were you writing?
Mostly short stories, some poetry, sometimes songs, sometimes as I got into high school, got more into playwriting, all sorts of different creative ideas, some attempts at kids' books as well at that time.
So who were some of the influences as you were going along? Who are the writers that you like to read at that point in time?
Oh, I was very much into C.S. Lewis, the Narnia series, David Eddings, a lot of fantasy writers at that time. I wasn't a Christian growing up at that time, so I didn't know about a lot of the Christian writers. I was surprised to find out later that C.S. Lewis was a Christian. My goodness.
Was there anyone that, you mentioned C.S. Lewis and David Eddings, was there any one writer that you liked to go back to all the time and reread their works?
Well, I definitely would say C.S. Lewis at this time. I'm actually reading the Narnia series to my daughter right now. We're going through that again, which is wonderful.
Now, is there anybody that right now that's an influence on you?
Right now, I've got a wonderful church family in Calgary, and we have an incredible, vibrant artistic community at our church. We do plays every year. There's a lot of drama and a lot of focus on worship arts. And so that is definitely an influence as to what has been inspiring me currently. However, growing up, and I would just say now, looking back, that God was my influence and my inspiration.
I want to shift gears a little bit there, because you talked about your church being an influence and the type of things that they're doing. Have you found, is that an unusual aspect for your church to be doing that much within the arts?
It is. I have been to a lot of different churches, and not very many really support the dramatic arts and trying to promote Jesus and showing who he really is in creative ways. So it isn't common, I would say.
What sort of have you had an influence in this happening from your perspective of being an artist?
Have I been an influence to my church?
Yeah, have you had a chance to be involved in that?
Oh, I certainly have. Not as much as I would like. I'm hoping to get involved a little bit more with some future ideas I have around in regards to some plays that I've written. I did write a play about a couple years ago with another church I had attended, and we used it as a fundraising tool, and it raised $1,000. So I guess that's kind of what spurned the idea that maybe stuff that I'm doing that comes out of my brain at 2 o'clock in the morning could actually be used for God's kingdom.
Now, you've mentioned that you've, over the years, you've written in a number of different genres. You just mentioned the play that you wrote. You've written poetry in the past. You're doing some short stories. Now you've written a children's book. Is there any one genre that you like to work in over the others right now?
Well, currently, writing a children's book, although I've dabbled in it years ago, making another attempt at it again with The Great Carp Escape here, has definitely been a new challenge. It is not easy writing a children's book. I would say that currently this is my focus right now, because I have a young one, and I've been reading to her a lot, and I wanted to write a story that really spoke to her, that I had a background in. There's a lot of kids' books out there that are quite meaningless in some ways. I was quite surprised, and I thought, you know, I think I could even do a better job than this with some books out there. Others are just incredible. It just depends on what you pick up.
Well, I want to talk about The Great Carp Escape in more detail in a couple of minutes, but you mentioned that it's challenging, it's difficult to write a children's book. I think most people look at children's books, and because of the simplicity of the book, are always going, well, that's not that hard to do. You know, how can it be very difficult to write a children's book? What is the key challenge in writing a children's book?
Oh, well, I would say patience. And I understand patience in Latin means to suffer. And most of us artsy people don't like to suffer very much, in my experience. What I found with The Great Carp Escape, God just downloaded this childhood memory I had at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I don't know, Robert, if you get those brilliant ideas in the wee small hours of the morning, but I do, and I actually obeyed, and I wrote the manuscript for The Great Carp Escape within an hour and a half, and it took me 3 years to figure out what God wanted me to do to publish it. So I would say patience has been the strongest challenge, and waiting and waiting to see which door opens now, which door opens now, which door closes now, and where am I supposed to navigate and go through the maze from here.
Well, what I want to do is I want to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue our conversation with author Irish Beth Maddock. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
When your face lights up and you're down in your heart, you see, darling, I know, and I don't see that spot. You turn away to try and ease the pain. It's easy to know who's the one to blame. Try to fix it, but you can't run back into my heart. Never knew there were things unsaid, but you were there. it's all right to fail. Be still in my heart, I will not part from your ways. Hold fast to the road, it will take you.
You've been listening to Run Back from the Royal Foundry's Wherever We Go CD. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Irish Beth Maddock. Irish, we were talking before we went to the break about the Great Carp Escape and how you had this memory that you thought about it at the, in the wee hours of the morning. And yes, I do get those ideas in the wee hours of the morning. Now with my smartphone, I'm able to actually sort of type in the information before I tried notes, and I found they were totally illegible in the morning. But talk us through. You said the carp escape comes from a real life incident. Mm-hmm. Tell us a bit about that and about that event and how it led to the book.
Yes, well, back in the 1980s, my family and I grew up in Vernon, British Columbia, and we lived on the shores of Okanagan Lake. And one spring, the lake flooded into a pasture beside our home, and there was a marsh nearby, and it was full of carp. And being the bottom-dwelling fish that they are, they followed the floodwaters inland into the pasture. And then as the lake receded, the carp, there were scores of them. They were just fat and ugly and scaly and blue. There were just scores of them trapped in this landlocked pond. And then the water began to dry up. So that is the basis of the story, and that is what actually happened.
Now, when you're writing a children's book, one of the things that I've been taught, I mean, I don't write children's book myself, but is trying to keep the language simple, trying to keep the language not as complex as you would have with an adult, although it's not simplistic. As you were telling the story and trying to retell the story from your childhood, what kind of challenges did you face in the writing process to make this something that's going to work well as a children's book?
Well, thankfully, I had practice. I was able to practice with my then 4-year-old daughter. So I tried to use words that I knew she could understand to start with. And so when I wrote the manuscript and I would read it to her, she would say, "Mama, read it again." So I knew I was on the right track with using simple words that even she could understand. She got the concept, even as a 4-year-old. I do believe that was divinely inspired, though, because I'm certainly not a child educator. I don't have a background in that regard. I actually work more with seniors in the past. So, but you're right, it was a challenge to make sure, would my child or any child be able to understand the words that are being written here in this story?
I know, for example, Robert Munch did the same thing, and in terms of he was working at a daycare, and he used to tell the stories to the children at the daycare, and it wasn't until he had the story in a form that they were really entertained by, and that he started actually putting it down on paper. And that, looking at the book, you know, one of the things you're saying in some of the material that's come out is that you really hope that this is going to act as, and I'm quoting here, a way to lure non-believers. Sort of walk us through what is the hope for the book in terms of trying to draw people who aren't believers right now into that relationship with Christ?
Well, this story I wrote was more than just a children's book. It was more than just a childhood memory. It was a healing story for me. Back in the 1970s, when I was 4 and my brother was 1, my birth mom chose to walk away. And I recall my dad came home from work to find us kids alone. And I know I'm not alone with things like this happening, and I know my dad did the best he could. But he didn't have a lot of parental support of his own, and times were hard. So not able to afford childcare, my dad would leave us at home by ourselves while he was at work, and he'd come home at lunch and check on us, and then he'd be back by supper. So as a four-year-old, I learned very quickly how to parent my baby brother, but I also learned very quickly that parents can forsake you. Now, the basis of this story is based on the Bible verse, "Though your mother and father forsake you, the Lord shall take you up." So I'm not sure if you noticed in looking through the story, but the dad in the story is actually Jesus. And what I realized later in life when I became a Christian is that Jesus was always with my brother and I in all our adventures, in all our loneliness, and in all our sorrow. And so that is the underlying basis where God takes us from dead water to living water. And that's vividly illustrated as we are the carp, and Jesus digs that trench for us back to living water. So that's sort of the underlying basis and allegory of the story.
Yeah, I did notice that symbolism in the illustrations, and that's one thing as well. You usually work with children's books, you usually work separately from the illustrator. Did you connect with the illustrator, who is Lucent
Oano?
Oano,
yes.
Sorry.
I was able to connect with him just via email a few times. He was hired by my publisher to illustrate The Great Carp Escape, and he did a phenomenal job in bringing alive the pictures. It was almost a shame to put words across them, if you ask me, but I didn't. So again, I believe that was divinely inspired, that connection and that symbolism and in portraying the Okanagan, and he's from the Philippines, so he did a fantastic job.
Well, and along with that whole aspect of healing and Jesus always being with you and that, you also talk about that you hope that the book will also be something that children will learn from. And a couple of things you are looking for them to learn about is the whole aspect of being a voice to the voiceless and the respect for all creation. I mean, you see how they move from seeing the carp as ugly to actually doing something to save the carp. You know, why are those type of lessons important for you to try and get across to youth?
Well, those are biblical values in themselves. You know, needing to promote these positive values to our kids is just, it's so important. And we need to teach our kids how knowledge and experience can bring about understanding and compassion, not only for all creatures, but for our fellow man. And what's more, the book talks about how God thinks we're wonderful. Well, that's something I missed out knowing when I was a youth. And I wrote this book so kids could know how wonderful God thinks they truly are, and that this incredible love that Christ has for us, it's just truly a message that we all need to hear, but none so more than our children.
Yeah, and you sort of have this postscript at the end where you quote from All Things Bright and Beautiful. You know, that whole aspect of all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the Lord God made them all. And that kind of wraps up everything that you're saying in the book. I'm assuming that was a deliberate choice?
It was, yes.
You also mentioned earlier about how you wrote a play a few years ago that it was used as a fundraiser. You're also saying that people might be able to use this as a fundraiser as well. How are you hoping to see that work?
Well, I was in Ontario recently, and I was able to speak about my book. I read it to the congregation, to the children, as well as the congregation, and then I was able to speak a lot about what we've shared in this interview. And then afterwards, the book is currently for sale for around the $13 mark, and God made it very clear to me that this book is not my book. This is His book, and it's to be used for His kingdom. So any schools, churches, ministries, charities that are interested, I'm willing to donate $5 of every book sold to go towards whatever the need at the moment may be. So, for example, this church in Ontario that I was just speaking at, we sold 75 books, so we were able to donate $375. Actually, there's still more coming in. And that was not a very big congregation, so the message very much moved people, and God was able to use my book to not only touch lives, but also to create fundraising efforts.
Okay. Well, I need to take one final break, and after we come back, we'll finish it, wrap up our conversation with author Irish Beth Maddock. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM.
I couldn't be wrong, but I know this is right. I could be wrong, but I feel it inside. What if I'm wrong? Can I swallow this pride? Does she know where the light is?
He could be wrong.
Connection. You've been listening to Something More from the Wherever We Go CD by the Royal Foundry. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to wrap up our conversation with author Irish Beth Maddock. You mentioned you were just in Ontario doing a reading of the book. You've had it out for a little bit now. What's been the reaction to the book?
I've had a lot of positive feedback, especially from non-Christians. It's been very interesting to see their reaction. The message still touches people. My book is for sale, for example, in Chapters here in Calgary, and my book launch is actually this weekend. And I went in there, as authors do, to see that, have that moment where you see your book on the shelves at Chapters. And I wasn't able to find it, so I asked the lady at the counter, and when she went to look it up for me, she stopped because she realized she had just read it yesterday. She showed me where it was, and with tears in her eyes, she said, "This is a wonderful book that children need to read and that children need to know that they're beautiful no matter how ugly they may feel." And that was really touching, just to get that message, even from sort of a secular-based sort of store and personnel working in the store. And to see that sort of emotion come from a person is very, mm-hmm. very touching.
Well, and that whole message is very very much in the media and even in the education system and things like that these days, as people are looking at the whole aspect of bullying and cyberbullying looking at all these aspects, is that whole aspect of it doesn't matter who you are and what you are, there's still value within yourself as an individual and as a person. Have you had any negative reaction to the book at this point?
I did have a couple teachers ask me if they could bring it into the public school system, and which I was certainly willing to do, but as soon as they read the book and as soon as they saw the word God was in the book, they told me, unfortunately, they were not allowed to bring this book into the public school system or into their libraries, which is a real shame.
So what's next on your agenda?
Well, the book launch is coming up this Saturday at Chapters Crowfoot here in Northwest Calgary. And I've got a few more interviews lined up. I'm also looking forward to, I've had an offer from one of the principals at the Catholic school system here in Calgary to offer my book as potential curriculum to the Catholic school system here in Calgary, so I'll be looking at those possibilities. We did a fundraiser recently with another school here in Calgary, a Christian-based school, and we were able to raise $125 to go to their funding needs. So I'm looking forward to approaching school boards and approaching charities and saying, listen, I believe God has given me something to share. What can we do? This whole earthquake with Nepal, I'm very interested in going to talk to Samaritan's Purse and see if I can set up a table at any future fundraising events they may have, and see if God can use my little story to help with that as well.
Mm-hmm. So what's if people are interested in finding out a little bit more about the Great Carp Escape, where can they do that?
They can go to any fine Christian bookstore here across Canada. The book should be in there. It is distributed by Ingram, so any bookstore can carry it. It is available online with Great Canadian Authors, with Chapters Indigo, with Amazon, and with Barnes & Noble. It is in ebook or hard copy format. Audiobook is coming soon, and it is going to be with some other outlets in the future. Currently, if you're in Calgary or in the Okanagan area where the book was spawned, if you will, the book is available in Chapters Indigo and Cole's locations in Calgary and the Okanagan.
Do you have a website where people can connect with you?
Certainly do. It's irishbethmaddock.com.
Great. Irish, thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
Thank you for listening to Arts Connection today, and thank you to my guest, Irish Beth Maddock. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for archive programs on our website at www.selawministries.ca. That's www.selawministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. For more information on Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries, email robert@selawministries.ca, follow us on Twitter at Selaw13, look for the Arts Connection page on Facebook, or check out the Arts Connection blog at rdaleleslie.wordpress.com. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.